Yeah, so on the failure side, genuinely, I feel nothing when I fail something. Like, I have a little bit of a day where I'm like, you know, going over it in my head. And that can be a day where I guess from the outside, you might go, oh, Sean, yeah, that's really affected you. But I'm just processing it. You know, I go to my office and I'm just processing things in my head for a couple of days. And then I'm straight back on the horse because I've hopefully managed to work out why I failed.
Welcome to the Helping Organizations Thrive podcast. Today, I have the pleasure of Sean Conway. Welcome to you, Sean.
Good morning. Good morning. Sorry, I had a cup of tea in my mouth there.
Yeah, good to see you. And you've named yourself The Beard, and I think it's quite obvious. And we may come to the story behind The Beard. But I was going to tell the audience a little bit about you just so they know who we're talking to. You are an adventurer, you're an extreme endurance athlete, a multiple world record holder, and an author of, I think, 7 books. And just to give some context to what we're talking about today, we're talking about sort of resilience and how to get that resilience and what that's about. And you've done some amazing achievements to date. I'm not going to list all of them because we'll be here for a long time. But you have swam the length of Great Britain from Land's End to John O'Groats, 900 miles. You've ran it. You've cycled it. You got a world record across cycling across Europe, 4,000 miles from Portugal to Russia in 24 days. You've done a continuous triathlon of over 4,000 miles. And then recently, and you finished this back in July this year, you did 105 full iron distance triathlons, which in essence is swimming 2.4 miles, cycling 112 miles, and running a marathon every day and repeating that with no rest days at all. And that was the end of it. And that broke a world record. The world record at that point was 101. And you went for, well, you went for 102, but ended up doing 105 and perhaps come to that. So it's quite amazing. I would say well done on that last record. That's quite awesome. I guess my big question for you really at the very outset, when I sort of get to understand a little bit more about and what I've read about you, is what's the why behind all this?
The why has changed over time, I guess. You know, in the early days, the original why was just to do something more interesting than I was doing. I used to be a school portrait photographer, and I found that extremely dull and unchallenging in every single way. All it did is it provided me with money in the bank and nothing else, you know, and you need a lot more in life to feel fulfilled and energized to get out of bed. So the why in the early days was just to, you know, go traveling, but I sort of wanted to do it and not just a travel way. Cause I'm terrible on holidays. But Caroline hates it cause I get very frustrated. I sort of need something to do and something to achieve. And it doesn't have to be big and grand and, you know, look at me. But I just feel like I need it's something to aim for. So yeah. So that was the early whys. And then, you know, once I discovered that I was actually pretty good at being miserable. Yeah, I think that's my superpower. I'm just very good at being cold, wet, miserable, hungry, and tired. Then the why sort of got to like, wow, well, you know, how far can I push myself? And then it's sort of, you know, there's 50% ego there, and then 50% just genuinely like intrigued and inquisitive into the human body and mind. So then that became the why a little bit. Now it's still a bit of both, you know. Now it's sort of a mixture of, you know, trying to push myself, seeing how far I can go, with an element of some exploration. Although the things I am doing are tending to move away from the adventure side, more to the sports side, I guess, the athletic side. But I got some other ideas that have quite a high element of adventure, I guess, in them. And you know, then there's the other one, which I get, you know, and this one is just pure ego, to be fair, is trying to show other people, you know, if I can do this, they can do that. And I get emails from people saying, oh, because you did this, I run a 5K. And the ego in me loves that. I love getting those emails from people saying, oh, I never thought I could do an Ironman, but seeing you do 105 full distances, I was like, well, I'm going to have a crack at an Ironman. And so I get a massive kick out of that. So that even that in itself gives me a reason to carry on and do more miserable things. So yeah, I guess there's no sort of one big putting my flag in the ground. I have no interest in legacy. That is, people ask me that, oh, you know, what do you want your legacy to be? Nothing. Don't care. I'll be in the ground. You know, although you do keep your copyright to your written word for like 70 years after you die, I think. So I do.
Oh, that's interesting.
My great-great-grandkids are going to be getting beer money from my book sales.
So interestingly, that how your why has changed as well, and the fact that you've got this superpower, you say, of being miserable. That's an interesting superpower to have. Most people have superpowers. Oh, I'm very good at speaking, communicating, inspiring people, but yours is being miserable. Now, it doesn't mean you're a miserable person, because you're not. I know you're not a miserable person. I don't know. I might have a beer with you sometime. You might be really miserable. I don't want to be hanging around with you. Who knows? But so just expand a bit more about that sort of superpower, about being miserable, and how that's enabled you to do what you're doing, and why you've tapped into something that's you perceive as a superpower.
Yeah. So when you do long, difficult things, journeys, adventures, challenges, businesses, whatever, there's going to be certainly at the beginning a high element of things that you have to do that you don't want to do. So, and getting out of bed when you don't want to get out of bed, and you know, you're going to have hurdles, you're going to have things that get in your way. And in my case, there's bad weather, you're cold, you're wet, you're hungry, you're tired, you're potentially battling some sort of injury, trying to work out whether that's long-term injury or short-term injury. Or if it's just pain, suck it up and carry on. If it's going to lead to stress fracture, you need to, you know, look at that. So it's, you know, I don't know why, but it just turns out that I've got a level of being miserable that allows me to sustain, and I can sustain that misery for days and weeks and months. So, I sort of think I had it the whole time. My whole life, because you know, even as a kid, I enjoyed being a bit different and a bit weird, and that often involved doing stuff that other people didn't want to do. And then in the photography game, when I was a school portrait photographer, you know, I stuck at that for way too long, really 2 or 3 years longer than I should have, without realizing it, because you know, it is, you know, the internet's full of like, never give up, you can do it, push through. But you know what, man, sometimes, like, the square peg doesn't fit the round hole, like maybe go and find a square hole, like, you know. And that's so there is conflicting advice there, and I'm to blame for that. You know, I'm also all for the you can push through, but you know, are you pushing towards the right goal? You know, that was my problem with photography. I didn't really have a goal, actually. That was the problem. I just thought, well, I'm making a living. If I earn more money, that maybe is the goal, as a loose goal. It wasn't sort of a big like, oh, I want to earn this by this age. It was just sort of like, well, let me just try and earn a little bit more and a little bit more. And there's no end to that ladder. So I think there's probably been something in me from an early age, and I don't know what that's where that's rooted in. But yeah, I'm glad I found a good way of channeling it, because, you know, this new life of mine now, well, it's not so new now, it's been 12 years. It's weird, I've actually been doing this longer than I was a photographer, which is sometimes baffling, because it felt like I was a photographer forever. I'm glad I found it, because it's given me a much more sort of fulfilling life. And I don't want to say purposeful, because I think the word purpose gets thrown around too much on the internet. Because I think fulfilling and is a better word for me anyway.
Yeah, and how do you, I suppose, navigate that ability to keep going and be miserable? As you say, in your photography business, you probably felt it kept going too long, and you almost endured, which is I say, superpower. But as you say, there's that flip side to that, actually, when you need to give up. And I've heard that, you know, the greatest poker players in the world know when to fold and know when to give up. It doesn't mean giving up on something. It means changing tack, going for something else. So how do you navigate that yourself? Do you know when to give up? I know with your 105, you were going for 102, and then you put it out, you did another one, because you, in fact, I think you printed 123 hats, numbers on your hats. Yeah. But also the fact that you'd then ask the list, your fans or your followers, should I do another one? They all went yes, of course they would, because they want to watch somebody have some misery.
I thought I could roll that one out until they eventually told me to stop, but I figured
But they use the coin, and I thought, so how do you then decide when to stop or give up on something? Have you got an example where you've pushed through, or do you just keep going? Because I know you talk a lot about failure, and you're quite open about that as well, but how do you sort of keep pushing through and or decide, actually, this is not for me, I'm going to do something different?
I don't think I've ever gone, oh, this is not for me, I don't fancy it. You know, every time I've failed at something, and there's been many, it's mainly been what I call sort of showstoppers. Like there'd be no physical way of going through without jeopardizing the rest of my life. So for example, when I first ran the length of Britain, you know, that one I got down towards Inverness, Drumna Drochet, along Loch Ness, and my knee was so inflamed, the tracking was so bad on my kneecap due to tightness and inflammation, that had I carried on, that would have potentially led to a lifelong injury. And you know what, that just, it's not worth it for me. It's not worth it. Because it's not like I'm stuck in the middle of the Antarctic and need to get out, you know? So that was a case of just like, well, I've injured, you know, I'm a sportsman. We get injured. That's just the way it is. And you manage that. You know,
how do you manage it? Because obviously in the moment, how you manage that in the moment, how you decide and have that wisdom to foresee the long-term impact of something. And that could be in a business context as well, because people listening now could be in a business that's failing or not making any money, as well as in a scenario like yourself in a physical thing. And then how did you emotionally navigate that decision and work that through? Because that's quite challenging when you put so much into it and you've got so far to pull out. It's hard work, isn't it? It's harder than sometimes than actually going for something.
Yeah, I mean, I got advice from professionals. So, you know, I'm on the length of Britain run, I got injured. On my first attempt at a cross Europe run, I got injured. On my first attempt at Iron 105, 102, 105, I got injured. And I got some professional advice, and, you know, it was quite easy. It was, you know, it was black and white, really. It was, this injury is not just, you cannot carry on this and break the record, for example. So when I ran the length of Britain, there was no time frame on that. So technically, I probably could have put my leg in a cast and used crutches for most the rest of it, really. That's not the adventure I wanted. I knew, I felt like I'd be doing my body a disservice, because, you know, I know I can run a marathon a day. And, you know, I just tripped over on that rock and, you know, hurt my knee. And then that just compounded. And then the same with back to my point is that one I could have carried on, but I felt like it wouldn't have been how I wanted it to play out. Sort of the oil painting version of me running Britain or cycling across Europe or doing Iron 105, it wouldn't have come out like the way I wanted it to come out. So then the other two that I failed at, the big failures anyway, is my first attempt at cycling across Europe. You know, I picked up an injury that just meant I couldn't keep the pace. You know, I had to do 170 miles a day. Just couldn't do it with the injury. Just couldn't do it. So, you know, I basically had timed out. I wouldn't have got the record. So there was that. And then the same with the Ironman. The first Ironman distance challenge, came off the bike, injured ankle, and timed out on day 6. There's 2 timeouts on the multiple. When you do multiple full irons, you've got the actual sort of official record, which is the official time, which is you've got midnight to midnight. You've got a calendar day to do it. But then there's an unofficial record, which is what the internet sort of wants, is you've got the calendar day to do it. However, once the clock starts, you've got 17 hours to finish the triathlon. So that, you know, on day 6, I timed out of that. So I did 17 hours and 20 minutes or something because of the injury. And I carried on to day 7 anyway. And then day 7, I nearly timed out the 24 hours. I finished at like 3 minutes to midnight or something. So, you know, that was just taken away from me anyway. There was sort of no decision there because I timed out the record. you know, back to your question is, you know, how do you deal with it? So A, I speak to professionals, and B, you know, it comes with experience, because a lot of the time I'm referring to the various injuries and comparing them to things that have happened 10 years ago. I've got, you know, 12 years of experience now. So some things I know, right, well, that's just pain. You know, that's just tightness. That'll be fine. And then others, I'm sort of unsure. So I have to speak to a physio and get a team around me. And that's, again, super important. You know, you find the people who you want, who will support your idea, whatever it is, in business and adventure and a challenge and, you know, personal goals. Find those people and find the best people that you can that are, you know, that's convenient, whether it's be who you can afford, whether it's local people, whether it's friends and family, whatever. Find the best you can. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, work as a team. So even though all the stuff I do solo, there's, you know, there's no way I could have done it without, you know, sponsors who believed in me and nutritionists who gave me some advice. Even if it's just like a 5-minute phone call, I have one bit of advice. Like, you know, Rebecca, I need, how much creatine should I take every day? She's like, 3 grams, you'll be fine. So, you know, that's just a one-off call, and then I'm good on that. Same with the physio. When I'm running, I've got a tight calf, right? It's your weak hip, do some heel raises, you know. So yeah, it's find that team that believes in you, you know, and then you get this, what I call the snowball of life. You're the snowflake, you have the idea, you know, you're falling through the sky and you hit the ground. And hopefully, you know, you want to start rolling, but you need some other people to join you to get that snowball. And some people don't want to join you and they won't. But, you know, you find the people who do, and eventually you build up this awesome momentum where you're just gathering more and more people to help you. As soon as, you know, and the more momentum you get, the more people think, oh, wow, you know, he's actually going to go and do that, which is great. And then also the flip side is, once you've got loads of momentum, there'll be loads of people who didn't want to join your snowball at the beginning who now want to, and you can be like, see ya. So, that's sort of, I'm quite practical, I guess, when it comes to those sort of things. And, but, you know, I'm very wary of just painting this brush across this, you know, this whole statement of like, never give up, push through. Which, yes, there are times when you need to just push through and suck it up, but you also need to sort of look at the bigger picture sometimes and realize, is this the correct path up this mountain? Is there a different path, you know?
Yeah, and one of your, and you talk about that, your 10 pillars of resilience is to have community. And I guess that's what you're talking there, having that community of people around you who will support you, who will provide help, who will provide inspiration when you're feeling a bit low. Is that how you sort of perceive your community?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's finding people who have better skills than you to help you do what you want to do. Finding people who just want to be part of it. Maybe they have zero sort of skills physically, but actually having them there to support you emotionally is also super important. And making friends, you know, during I'm 105, there's a WhatsApp group of all the people who came and joined me, especially on the bike. And it's brilliant. We did a pub crawl a month ago. We're going to do an everything challenge. I'm seeing if we can do a Santa run somewhere around here. So, you know, and they're friends for life now. So that's also super important. You find like-minded people, right?
Ooh.
And that's also invaluable, I think.
Yeah, I can see them sort of spraying your beard white for your, yeah, the Santa sort of run. Definitely, you'd be quite good for that. Now, you're very open about your failures, which is, I think, quite unusual in the sense of, you actually put it on your website, and you call it your hiccups, which in some ways, it's not even using the word failure. You just put hiccups. Oh, it's just like hiccups, like a little bump in the road. And you have a quote, which is, it's in our failures where we become stronger. And I just want you to just unpack that and why you perceive it's your failures where you become stronger. And what have you learned? What did you learn from your first attempt of the 102, 105 sort of full iron, and what you do differently and how that was made you stronger?
Yeah. So on the failure side, genuinely, I feel nothing when I fail something. Like, I have a little bit of a day where I'm like, you know, going over it in my head. And that can be a day where, I guess, from the outside, you might go, oh, Sean, yeah, that's really affected you. But I'm just processing it. You know, I'm I go to my office and I'm just processing things in my head for a couple of days. And then I'm straight back on the horse because I've hopefully managed to work out why I failed. Working out how not to do it, right? So, and there was a couple of things, you know, I'll put my hands up, say I didn't do right in the first attempt for Iron 105. My route was too hilly on the bike and on the run. You know, there was too much trail on the run because I was trying to do the run near my house so that I could finish at home earlier. Because the only other option was a 40-minute potential commute back home after the run, which is what I landed up having to do for the second attempt. So it was not ideal being so far from home at the end of the run. But yeah, so the first attempt, I tried that. I also tried an open water swim, which from a swimming point of view was perfect because I'm wearing a wetsuit, so you swim a bit quicker in a wetsuit. I can get into my rhythm. But just the faff of getting in and out of the water in the cold morning, I was losing 45 minutes just in faff time having an open water swim, you know, even though my swim time was the same. So, yeah, so there was that issue. I probably didn't do enough big volume days in training to strengthen up the ankle. So when I fell off the bike, my left ankle stayed clipped into the pedal. And it just bent forward and it wasn't a bad injury. It was sort of just became really sort of a torn ligament, which became inflamed and got just unbearable, really. I think my marathon on day 7 was like 8 hours or something. It was ridiculous. It's really analyzing all those things that went wrong and working out how I could better them.
Do you journal that? Do you spend time when you fail, when something doesn't go quite? Do you sit down and take some time out? And do you write things down? How do you do that process of capturing that learning, I guess? Just a short interruption to the episode to let you know that this podcast is brought to you in association with LodgeCourt, who are experts in HR support. Are you worrying about employee performance, absences, and leave? Are you struggling with attracting and retaining the best talent for your business? I personally know the people at LodgeCourt, and they can support you with every people issue you may face. So focus on what you do best and let LodgeCourt deliver your HR support as an extension of your business with a tailored, flexible monthly retain package that is right for you and your people. And they are offering an exclusive offer for the listeners of this podcast, where you'll get the first month's free and an annual retain contract. To get this offer, quote, helping organizations thrive. Now back to the episode.
Yeah, I used to write it down when there was a lot to learn, whereas now I'm just tweaking, aren't I? You know, I've got so much information in my head already and so much knowledge from doing all these big long endurance challenges that when things go wrong, it's not like I'm rewriting the whole book. So I don't physically have to sit there with a pen and paper anymore. I can go, oh, and actually, all I need to do is tweak that little thing. Because remember, you know, I'm working with such marginal percentages. You know, to do 105 full iron distance triathlons in a row, you know, it's 5% potentially. You know, there's a 5% window at the top that if you can just get 5% better, you're going to be on the front of the wave. If you're 5% worse, you're on the back of the wave and you're always climbing up the wave. And, you know, that's horrible. Whereas if you can just be, you know, if your route can be 5% flatter, you know, if your commute can be shorter back home, if you can get a little bit more sleep, if you can eat the right amount, you know, if you have 5% less on food each day, that's a downhill spiral. If you can be 5% quicker as well, you know, a little bit quicker, 5% stronger in your tendons and ligaments and that sort of thing. You know, so for me, it's now got to the point where I can just think it in my head and go, right, well, I actually really, and some of the stuff I knew really, you know, I was like, oh, I shouldn't be doing this run route, but it's near home. It means I can do 2 laps and get home and see the kids in between. That's not ideal, but I'll just do it. I'll suck it up and do it. But yeah, just it didn't work. Even though the run was fine, but you know, and I got the injury from the bike, but I still think, and my times were getting quicker. It was just tough. That first week, tougher than it needed to be, and added so much more risk of making it sustainable for 3.5 months, you know?
But it's like anything, though. You set out a plan to be closer to home, which would save you 30, 40 minutes. So that was your mindset. That was your plan. And it made sense at that time. That's the wisdom you knew until you went for it. And then you realized, obviously, it was hillier than you anticipated. And therefore, you redo things and relearn. And that's how we need to be. And I think it's interesting. I don't know, this sounds very cliche. As I say this now, is that, you know, instead of just looking at failure as failure, use failure as the word feedback. It's like a feedback loop, isn't it? And I do a lot of work with teams and individuals where things don't go as planned, because the fact is you set out to do a plan and there'll always be differences. There'll always be changes. There'll always be adaptations you need. And I think it's important to capture those learnings and to think, okay, what can I do differently next time, and redo it and see the sort of failure or the thing you didn't quite achieve as a feedback to you to say, okay, do something differently, do things. When you went into the 105 at the start, I've done an Ironman, I've done 1% of what you did, basically. That felt pretty big to me, actually, at the time. And it is a big thing, as you know, it is a huge thing in itself. And I know when I was, you know, ready to do that swim, you know, I was in an event, it's like a different context to you. I was fairly nervous. Will I do this? You know, will I complete it? Will I'm all that, all those things. I had lots of fear type feels, which are sort of normal, natural. What was going on in your head before you started, about to start this 105 journey? Was there a sense of fear? Was there a sense of excitement, anticipation? What was going on?
So there was a little bit of trepidation because there were still quite a few things that could end the attempt that were out of my control, you know? So I could crash on the bike again. I could get run over by a motorist on the bike. Those are two of the main worries from not a non-complete. I was feeling like, other than that, I genuinely believed, and you sort of have to go into it with this attitude, I think, that it was a done deal. I just need to, you know, it's a done deal. Like, and that's why I printed numbers up to 123, because it was my way of manifesting this concept that actually, you know, I just need to turn up and do it. And in fact, not only am I going to break the record, I'm going to smash it. I'm going to go all the way to 123. And that, it's that, and also there's no plan B, you know, and people were trying to give me plan Bs, you know, someone said, oh, well, if you're not managing the fulls, you know, after a week, will you move to halves? I was like, no, I definitely won't. I'll just, you know, if I get injured again, I'll just, you know, restart. And so, yeah, I mean, I was really confident. You know, you sort of have to be, really, because if you have any niggles of doubt, they're going to play on your mind rather focus on, you know, the fact that you're going to do it, you're going to do it well, and how do you need to do it well? And you mentioned the 10 pillars. There's actually 10.5 now, which is planning, experience, fitness, health, nutrition, hydration, recovery, muscle management, mindset, community, and the 0.5 is luck. You do need some luck. So yeah, it's about, you know, going into it with no plan B, for me anyway, and wholeheartedly believing it's a done deal. And even on the first attempt, I fully believed it. I even paid my crew 50 a month's and a half wage, well, yeah, nearly 2 months' wage for a week's work. So, and that's how much I believed it was a done deal. You know, I was like, right, well, I'll give you 50% up front and then you'll get 50% at the end. So let's go. And yeah, obviously I only made a week, so they did quite well from that. So, yeah, I guess, you know, you've just got to do all the groundwork so that there's no surprises, so that when you do start, you know that, well, you believe that it's, you're in the system now, you trust the process, you've built the process yourself, you've trained hard, you're feeling pretty good, and you go. That's how I felt. The reality is I wasn't as prepared as I was hoping, truthfully. I'd been ill. I got like 4 chest infections in the lead up. So my training was way down. in the lead up. I actually had to delay the start by a week because of a chest infection. So, you know, and then I got injured in that first week because of it, because I didn't have the load that I was meant to have. So I had two knee issues, real bad knee issues that stayed with me for most of, especially my left knee. I couldn't do a quad stretch when you pull your foot back behind and touch your bum. I couldn't do a full quad stretch on the left leg for the rest of the 105 days. So, and in fact, it took like 2 or 3 weeks after that for the inflammation in my knee to go down enough for me to actually do a quad stretch. So, so I had that. I had a little shin issue again. Lower back issue, VMO going into the longus in my front quad. So yeah, there was lots of things that possibly, had I been a little bit more, hadn't I got ill annoyingly, would have made that first 10 days a lot easier than they were, because they really were quite miserable. I feel bad for people who do deckers, because a decker is 10, so you can do one a day deckers or continuous, but the one a day deckers, people do those, think, oh my, that's the most difficult thing in my whole life, there's no way I could do 100. But actually the first 10 are the worst. You know, once you start doing 11 12 30, by the time you do 20, you should hopefully be in the swing of things, if you're conditioned enough to allow your body to heal to get to that point. Obviously, if you're broken from day one, and if on day 10 you're only getting 2 hours sleep before the next start line, then yeah, you're on the downhill spiral, unfortunately. But you know, luckily I was, you know, in a position to be fit enough to stay on the front of the wave, to get the recovery, to get the sleep, to get the nutrition in, and do a fast enough time to make it repeatable and sustainable for 105 days, you know.
Yeah, I've heard when you do something for such a long period, going beyond 10 or 15, your body almost gets used to that. It becomes like a norm. And I interviewed a guy who ran 48 marathons in 48 counties. He was an ex sort of strongman. And he said after about 15 or 20, he just became, that's what he did. And his mindset had adapted to, he was going to wake up, run a marathon, and his body just, okay, that's what you're going to do today, carry on. And it's interesting how your body just adapts and starts to sort of incorporate that into how you are, which is a lesson in when you change your behavior or change something, and that could be in a business context, could be in a sporting context. Actually, you will eventually get your body into a place where it will accept that, and your mindset will accept it as well. Going back to your plan, no plan B, it's an interesting concept, isn't it? Often, you know, the world of business or any scenario, we always have a backup plan, but you don't, which it for me feels like it's a real sense of you're fully committed, it's all in. And, you know, I think Wim Hof says, you know, you just commit. He just says, just commit and just do it. That's it. And as you say, you use the process to go and do that.
Yeah. No, and I really believe in no plan B, because, for example, what would have on iron 105, what would plan B have been, right? So let's say I'd just chosen to make a plan B. So plan B could have been, well, if it's not going well, I'd change to half irons, and then I'd break the world record for half irons, right? That could have been a plan B. Plan B could have also been, oh, let's just get to 60, then I have the European record. That could have been that. Another plan B could have been, oh, let's just get to 21. And then I have the British record, you know. The problem was, I now would be sitting here going, oh, well, you know, I did halves, did 105 half irons, and I'd get nothing from that personally, you know. So what? What did I go? I didn't want to do that. So, you know, for me, it's important to just have no plan B, because you can then get suckered into doing plan B if plan A is not quite working out for you. And then all of a sudden you go, oh, well, actually, I'm the British record holder. That's pretty good, isn't it? You know? And that's what I did in photography. You know, I was trying to be this amazing National Geographic photographer. plan B was photographing crying babies because it paid better and it was easy money. So I ended up doing plan B my whole life. And then eventually I was, this is rubbish. I hate it. I should have stuck to plan A. It would have been a lot harder and more difficult, but I'd be way better now, 10 years down the line. So, and I'm glad that's been my attitude for this now, because I'm now, you know, sitting here talking to you about all the plan A's that eventually worked out, not for the first time, but eventually they worked out, most of them. And I feel like it's given me a much more rewarding existence in life than had I potentially had all these plan B's and C's that I would have landed up doing. Because I think for me, that just is not good for the way I approach things, you know?
So having your plan A in sight, and that's where you're all in, did you have any thinking of like almost scenarios of what could go wrong as you're going through heading towards plan A? As in, did you think those through? I did a lot of work with teams where we visualize the potentials of what may go wrong, but then it's not being negative, it's just the reality of how things are. And then you look at strategies to mitigate it. And, you know, Olympic swimmers do this, and lots of, you know, scenarios where they visualize their goggles falling off and swimming where they can't see, or their swimsuit tear, that type. Did you have those, that scenario plan in the context of the 105?
Oh yeah. You've got to have all your tools in the toolbox, right? So you're not changing your plan. You know, you're not having a plan B. However, you are preparing yourself for inevitable hurdles within plan A. And you need to find out ways of mitigating those, so making sure they don't happen, and B, if they do happen, what are you going to do? So, for example, you know, having loads of reflective gear on the bike, and you know, two bike lights and things like that, was going to hopefully make me more visible on the road, choosing the right route, and that sort of thing. Being flexible enough to change the route, and I did change the bike route a couple of times because for two things: one, potholes, and then two, when more people came and joined me on the bike, some of the smaller back lanes, we were having some real close shaves with oncoming cars on the narrow lane, so I moved it to a slightly bigger road where cars could overtake us and stuff. So, you know, that was just thinking about what could happen and working out the situation, or knowing that there are potentially other options, and we'll just be, you know, be flexible enough to pivot and turn and change direction. So, you know, I would do a course, you know, and there was three laps that I would do. So from the bike leg, we'll go down to halt, three laps, and then back to the run. You know, when I did change one of those, I changed it midway through a day. I didn't sort of finish the three laps and then go home and that night and go, right, well, I think actually there's this other little side road, which would be a better option, which adds this much. So literally on one of my loops, I went to the crew and said, right, we need to get rid of this section. It's too dangerous. I think I can do this back thing. How much more mileage does that add? Do a proper route, calculate the distance, and then work it all out. And yeah, so we were sort of on, you know, having the plan and the vision, but also knowing that, you know, you need to be flexible enough to, when things aren't going well, you know, do a divert, you know, and go around the rock and mm-hmm. go, you know, well, there's all the analogies of what you can do, but you know, that's the, in essence, what I was doing, thinking of all the things, you know, if I pick up, and there were certain particular injuries that I was, you know, bound to get or more likely to get. So again, working with my physio, going, right, well, I'm probably going to get this, and this. What do I do? How do I deal with them? And I didn't actually get a lot of them. I got two of them that we thought, and then I got a couple others that we didn't realize I'd get. And yeah, it's, you know, as you say, having those contingencies and just having them, and even just having them in the back of your mind, so that they're not a surprise when they come. You know, for example, a stress fracture, highly likely, you know, to get a stress fracture on the run leg of doing, you know, even if you just did 105 marathons in a row, that would be quite high on the list. You know, add the swim and the bike to the top, to the front end of that risk goes up. So, you know, we think, right, well, if I get there's a certain taping you can do. There's a boot I could wear. There's all these various braces I could use which bypasses the strain. You put a brace around your knee that goes down to inside your shoe, which is almost like running on stilts. So there's all these things I could have done had I got a stress fracture. We didn't have them in place. I didn't buy the bracket, the brace, for example, but we knew we could get one if we needed it. So, if it had come, it wouldn't have been a massive shock to the system, and we would be able to sort of crack on and hopefully allow it to heal type thing. So it is, yeah, you've got to sit down and work out what potentially could go wrong, and then things that could go wrong that could end the attempt, and then things that could go wrong that could slow you down to a point where it's not sustainable because you're not getting enough sleep, and things like that, and eating enough and drinking enough and hydration, nutrition. You know, what if I'm get dehydrated on a day, or what if I get diarrhea and I'm losing all my food and liquid. You know, so yeah, I was looking at all those things, and just keeping them in the back of my mind to deal with when I needed to deal with them. And a lot of it just came with experience. You know, it's not like I had to I'm not reinventing the wheel on certain things, because I know I've dealt with them in the past. I know how to deal with them if they come again. But yeah, there were certain big things you've always got to think about.
And there must have been, I'm sure, through the 105 days, some really tough days, some real low moments where you were, this is a dark day. And I don't know if you want to, is there any particular day or the number of days that were like that? And for whatever reason, if you just want to share a particular day or moments where it was really dark, and just how you kept going, how you kept being motivated, and how you got yourself out of that and to keep going. Because that's when it's tough, you know, and whether you're doing your first 5K, Ironman, whatever it may be, or you're in business and there's some really dark days and nothing's happening, you're not getting any clients or sales are going the wrong way. How did you navigate those sort of challenges on the 105?
Yeah, I mean, one thing I've known is that a bad day today definitely doesn't mean a bad day tomorrow. So I've always got that in the back of my mind. You know, if I've got a headwind and it's raining and it's miserable, you know, the chances are tomorrow is going to be better. You know, so I always keep that attitude, knowing that, you know, maybe just tomorrow I'll wake up and it'll be a different day. Then the two worst days, I guess, for my head and body really were day 3 and 4. I picked up the knee injury on day 1. Day 2, I was alone for most of the day on the bike. And then day 3 and 4, the knee was so bad that I nearly timed out. It was 16 hours, 50 something, 16 hours, 48 on those 2 days. You know, so I'm 10 minutes away from timing out. So that was difficult. I remember getting home at the end of day 4 when I had these two real close calls with timing out. And I just was like, damn it, you know, have I messed this up? I'm only human as well. I started to think, oh, well, I wish I'd done this. I wish I'd trained harder. I wish I'd XYZ. I wish I hadn't, you know, gotten a different bike, because basically the issue with my knee was a saddle height issue. That was my own fault. So there was all these little things that were playing in my head. But then I just had to sort of sit myself down and go, right, well, tomorrow's a different day. You don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. You know, I've spoken to the physio. I'm going to tape my knee and I'm going to wear patella bands and these sort of things, and use a different shoe, for example, put a different insole in the shoe to change my heel raise. So yeah, there was a lot of these little things that I did. And then the next day, you know, I was 5 minutes quicker. I was like, okay, well, the graph's going in the right direction here. That's good. And then the next day, a little bit quicker and a little bit quicker. But, you know, It was a tough couple of days. That first week was horrible, because also in the back of my mind is, well, last time you only made 7 days, mate, and all the internet said I told you so. So yeah, that was difficult to get my head around. But again, I had to just trust the team and trust my process and trust that actually I could, you know, what can I change? I can the knee injury is because of this, and if I do this with and all these things, it will help it make it a little bit easier. So yeah, I did those things, and then, you know, it slowly started to get better and quicker and quicker.
And how did you sort of stop yourself spiraling? And, you know, you did a little bit of that, oh, I should have done this, should have done that, that whole sort of narrative that we do, which it's slightly frustrating because we don't do anything about that. But how did you stop that spiral and not go into that sort of place where you just can't get out, and for some reason you just start to then give up and start to forget about all this and just almost become really inwardly negative about things?
I didn't have the time. I didn't have the time to think, you know. So on those days, I would finish the run at 9:50, for example. I'm in the car at 10 p.m. I get home, I shove food down my throat, and I'm straight into bed. You know, there's sort of real no time to wallow on these sort of things when there's no rest days allowed. And then I'm up at 4:29, and it's just, right, well, I know I can do the swim, because the run was my biggest issue. So I was like, right, well, I know I can do the swim, and I know I can do the bike, and then we'll just deal with the run when I get there. And then, you know, day three, the run was also bad, but it was a couple of minutes quicker. I was like, well, okay, this is not ideal, but I am 2 minutes quicker, so that's still good. And then, you know, day five, day six, day seven, I slowly got quicker and quicker. So yeah, I sort of just don't have the time, really. You know, I was eat, sleep, bed. You know, in the first week, I didn't shower. I didn't have time to shower. I get home, I'd shove food down my throat, and I just flop onto bed in my kit, and then wake up in the morning, get out my kit, get out my running kit, and get into my blooming swimming kit and crack on. So yeah, I sort of just didn't have the time to think, really. I was so exhausted, and that was probably a good thing. You know, let's say I was only doing a marathon challenge, we do, you know, a marathon a day, it's like, well, you've got lots of time to think. If things are going wrong, you can wallow in your own sorrows, can't you? Whereas this one, you know, you do 17, 18 hours a day, you know, it's, you don't have much time to work out what's good or bad or up or down, really.
And finally, really, in terms of, I'm sure you've learned many lessons in this, doing this 105 challenge. What was one sort of key lesson for you that you learned that you're applying to your life or you're incorporating to your life? Also, those who are listening right now who are, you know, doing big challenges, whether that's sporting or in business, that could really help them as well as a lesson from your own experience.
Yeah, two things is, don't get overwhelmed by the big picture. You can sometimes think about the big end goal and where you want to be, and it's so scary that you then don't even take the first step. And certainly, even if you tell me today, like, Sean, you know, what do you think about doing 105 for Lions? Even now I'm going, wow, that's hard. But actually, I know I can swim 2.4 miles. I know I can cycle 112, and I know I can run a marathon. So you break it down. And the second thing is, find that list of non-negotiables that you need to do. And for me, it's the 10.5 pistons of endurance. And I write them down. And every day, if things aren't going well, I'm analyzing all those 10 and a half, you know. And sometimes it's just not going well because you've had bad luck. You know, you've just had bad luck, and that's one of the pistons. So you wake up tomorrow and maybe it'll be different. But sometimes, you know, it's right. Well, why things not going well here? Right. Well, it's nutrition, or it's recovery, or it's hydration, or it's some sneaky idiots find their way into your community and put doubt into your mind and don't operate as a team player. You know, get rid of them. So whatever it is, find that list, write it down. And when things aren't going well, micromanage each of those to work out what can you tweak that'll help you get better. And I think those are the two things I've learned. You know, don't think about the big picture too much, and then focus on all the controllables and non-negotiables, and work out how you can optimize each of those. And then you'll suddenly realize that you will make progress, you know.
Well, I think that's fantastic advice. I really appreciate your time today, Sean, and inspiring story. And again, well done for getting a world record of 105 for Ironman sort of in 105 days. It's pretty awesome, actually. You must be really pleased with yourself, and continue to inspire other people. If people want to connect with you or get in touch with you, what's the best way of doing that?
Yeah, you can, I guess, social media, just search Sean Conway on various channels, Instagram, whatnot. Otherwise, SeanConway.com. there's a lot of info there. I'll be doing a speaking tour pretty soon. So that's coming out. I've got, I've written 7 books. So they're all available as well, which is quite exciting. I'm quite looking forward to writing the Iron 105 book, actually. So that's hopefully going to be out in the new year. Well, March, April time. So, watch this space, but yeah, just search my name. I'm sort of there, here and everywhere, I guess.
Well, thank you for your time today, Sean.
No worries, Julian. Thanks, mate.
Thank you for taking the time to listen to this episode. If you like this episode, then please rate, review, and share it with your friends and colleagues. As a coaching practice, I coach high-performing leaders and teams with extreme ambitions, and it will help you go beyond what you believe is possible. If this sounds like you, then let's have a conversation. You can contact me at julianrobertsconsulting.com.